Good morning, and welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and welcome to an hour of mind power. Well, we're going to be starting this week with a wonderful subject, and I know so many of you who are regular listeners to the show find anything to do with the psychic area fascinating and intriguing. Well, it's not going to be any different today. In fact, I think we may be adding to your education a little bit because of the guest that I have. His name is Douglas James Cottrell. And his book is called The Secrets of Life. Douglas, where are you?
Well, I reside in London, Ontario, Canada.
London, Ontario, Canada. And I know it's brisk and cool back there.
Well, it hasn't been so bad lately. We've managed to miss that with the global warming. We're in favor of that. We've missed the snow almost completely this year.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Well, Doug, I've had a chance to chat with you, and it was about a month ago, and you're a man that has ended up walking a rather unique road in life. You, in the mid-70s, decided that you were going to get into the area of doing what's commonly called readings, and you have been so involved with this. Give us a little bit of your background and how you ended up taking this very unique path of experience in life.
Well, it started not from me deciding that I was going to investigate the metaphysical, spiritual, parapsychology aspects of life. It was due to my eldest daughter, Sherry Ann, who was born with some severe difficulties and subsequent to those difficulties was put into an institution when she was 2.5 years of age. And that was back in, she was born in 1968, and by the middle of 1970, she was put into a home near Plainville, Plainfield, which is near Kingston in Ontario, a couple of hours away from her family home. 4 years later, somebody handed me a book. I was working for the Toronto Daily Star at the time, Canada's largest newspaper. And in that book, there was hope for, or at least there might be answers to what could be done or might not be available from a certain perspective, a psychic spiritual perspective. And that book was about Edgar Cayce. And I read that book with great enthusiasm, as any parent with a handicapped child would naturally do. I wasn't skeptical. I was cautious. But that book, that particular book, started me on this path of investigating what otherwise would have been allocated to the realm of spiritualism or a carnival atmosphere, so to speak. I did meet a man in out of Michigan. Ross Peterson was his name. He is now deceased. And in 1974, or thereabouts, he gave a reading on my daughter, Sherry Ann, in which he, in an intuitive state, was able to tell me exactly what was wrong with her and what might help using natural or holistic therapies. We applied them. We took her out of the home to everybody's great dismay and applied the advice that Ross had given us in this deep meditative state that he was in, that is commonly called the trance, not a mediumship, but a high self, clairvoyant, spiritual self speaking through the ordinary conscious self. So at that point in time, he was able to help us tremendously, and I was very enthusiastic. I was about 24 or so years old at the time, and one in their mid-20s tends to be very enthusiastic about things. And we consequently followed the advice, and Sherry managed to live until she was 38 years of age. which would be 3 or 4 times longer than anybody had predicted that she would be able to survive.
Mm-hmm.
The part and parcel of her difficulty was actually putting her into the institution for the first 4 years, the first 6 years of her life. She went into the institution weighing 22 pounds, and she came out weighing 22 pounds when she was 6.5 years of age.
Oh, my goodness.
At that point in time, it was difficult for her to eat, and the protocol was basically to give medications or tranquilizers to children and then allow them to expire. And Sherry suffered through that, her formable stages, in which she never did talk, but she could make sounds and she could sing, and she was a very happy child all the way through her life. And my wife, Karen, was her best friend and nursemaid and mother and everything that Sherry needed. Sherry had an ability to touch people and make them feel very happy or content. And on occasion, people who would come to our house who would think that they had problems when they would see Sherry, they'd say, I thought I had problems when I came to your house, but I'm leaving now after meeting Sherry, and I know I have no problem I can solve.
Mm-hmm.
My path followed the model of Edgar Cayce, followed the model of Ross Peterson, who did very much similar readings as Edgar Cayce. I was, of course, very interested in what could be obtained from a metaphysical health direction, if you will. And from the time I started on the path, I have tenaciously investigated all aspects of the spiritual world. Soon after I was exposed to Ross Peterson's ability, I tried to emulate him or imitate him, if the case may be. And I had some ability in which I would be able to see glimpses of people in certain health predicaments, and also to be able to come up with some remedies or what suggestions for remedies, usually involving different practitioners who are much more skilled at what they did than, of course, I would ever be.
Mm-hmm.
And now 35 years almost have gone by. I have, in an analytical way, followed that model of investigation to the point that my motto is faith is built on belief and belief is built on evidence. And I've been able to see auras, interpret dreams, lay hands on people, as well as having a long workload or archive of well over 10,000 people have come to see me in the last 33 decades or so.
Mm-hmm.
And we've done sessions, we've recorded them, we've documented them, and people have come to know that I'm a reliable and accurate individual when it comes to those processes or those abilities to intuitively see what's inside somebody's body or what their problem might be, as well as, of course, what their past lives might be and how they relate to the present, and as well as, you know, other conditions of, that we have we get involved in the world. Moving, marriage, of course, money-making. Made a lot of people a lot of money in investments. And I've not done too badly myself from time to time, as the case may be.
Now, Doug, with what you've done, this is something, because of my experience, and we've talked about this, to me, this is something that's available to everyone. But as you discovered, it took a discipline. Now, with Edgar Cayce, he found out about his capacity for being the vehicle of communication by accident. And it was because of hypnosis. And then when he was able to go into this altered state, then the communication that came through him was quite clear and was very much to the point. With you, you have what you call a particular process. It's deep trance meditation, and you abbreviate it DTM. Can you describe what that is like and how you evolved through that? I know Ross was your mentor to a degree, and he was the one that made you aware of your talents. When you do this, is there any particular procedure you go through? I know you have some information in your book, which, by the way, for those of you tuning in, it's Secrets of Life by Douglas James Cottrell. What is this like, this process? Do you use music? Is it just something where you do it? Is it very quick? Do you take a few minutes? What is it that's involved with this?
Okay. Your questions. The proper name for this is called Sambalism, and Edgar Cayce himself did a lot of research in Sambalism. What was it all about? Ross Peterson's ability, likewise, was a purposeful direction. He attempted to do this, and Ross was somebody who studied hypnosis and sort of fell into a deep state of meditation while in a hypnotic state, a self-induced hypnotic state. What I did, and what I believe you're correct in saying, is this process is open to a lot of people, especially people who want to contact the Akashic Records or want to go into the deeper, more profound states of meditation in which accurate and knowledgeable information is gathered, and I'm speaking beyond their conscious awareness. The idea is that one slows down the metabolism. The breathing is the key. Lowering the respiration rate allows, for lack of a better term, all the vibrations in the body to slow down to the point that you would arrive at, say, a deep state of sleep or in a deep dream. When you're in that state of mind, the mental activities, the spiritual activities, the high self, soul mind activities don't slow down. They are exaggerated or they become more active. While the body is asleep, and the book, The Secrets of Life, if people want to read the website, douglasjamescockrell.com, the whole book was written in this state of meditation, or as we like to say around the family, the book was written by a man who was sound asleep. This state of mind is a profound state of mind in which you can go out and gather information. And I think the key to that is understanding that when you're in a state of meditation, your emotional attachment to things lessens or you become more detached, and as such, there's no fear, there's no willingness to please, there's no willingness to be right. There is just a monotone, if you will, of emotion, which allows clear seeing, and one can peer into the Akashic or into the past or into the future being clairvoyance, the past being past lives or investigation of previous or past experiences, all which is contained in the ever-present moment or the Akashic Records. And as one lowers their meditative physical self, the mental spiritual self is heightened or excited, for lack of a better term, and which you can then project your mind, or you can do remote viewing. You can have an introspective mind in which you can go and look at somebody, psychically speaking, and this has earned me the name, the man with the X-ray eyes. You can perceive the person on a physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual level and retrieve information. Now, what is happening at that point in time is my respiration is very low, my heart rate is suppressed, and at the same time, I'm not panicking or becoming concerned that my respiration is low. And that allows the mind to free itself in a similar way to people who do astral traveling, to give some pictorial display to this. The mind detaches itself from the body, and then it is somewhat like the subconscious mind, requiring, well, I actually call it a super subconscious mind, the contemplative mind. It requires some direction. My wife, like Gertrude, used to do for Cayce, and like Ross Peterson's wife, Irva, did, it would tell my mind to go and locate somebody at a certain location, and the mind would follow that direction.
Mm-hmm.
It then would be told, please examine the body, I'm looking for points of fault or difficulty, and tell us what they are, and then give us remedies or solutions that would be helpful to the body. Now, in that way, you can see that there's a certain almost computer programming kind of thing happening where you're saying, go here, do this, this is what we want you to find out, and then tell us what you found out. And again, this is the example of all the things that we take for granted when we hear people talk about the subconscious mind and imagination, and how people can be suggestible in a hypnotic state. And I say naturally, because these are the alternative states of awareness or mind that we go through when we lose our conscious mind, or as I like to call it, the analytical, rational mind, and we dive deeply into that contemplative mind, which naturally has all these abilities, these creative abilities associated with it. That's all going on when one allows himself in a state of mind to relax, to allow the body to fall into a state of sleep, but at the same time arriving at that threshold between unconscious and consciousness. It's not a hypnotic state, but it may look like one. The term trance is a medical term which simply means someone has lowered their mental activities into a state of awareness or subconscious ability. But at that point in time, the intellect of that state of mind is extremely high. Again, because you're touching upon the soul mind, which has this connection to all things, a consciousness beyond the person's ordinary waking consciousness, their personality mind. And it is in contact with other soul minds, and therefore this information basically is, if I can be light about this, the soul mind going out and tapping another soul mind on the shoulder and saying, okay, now what's your problem here? I see, you know, you have an appendicitis, or that you have some juvenile diabetic condition, and that oranges and apples and grapes are good for you, or that you have a problem in which you're afraid of knives that came from a past life in which you were assassinated or by a dagger or something. Bringing that information back has to have the one and only thing for me personally that's important, and that is that has to have some value. To say that somebody was a soldier in Egyptian times, that doesn't mean anything. That's just maybe nice to know. But then to bring back some information, and that is why you are fixated with certain things, certain colors, or why you have a phobia about something, spiders or whatever. And you can, by understanding this, remedy that diseasement in your body, your mind. Then that's valuable information. Taking it up to a step a little higher, predicting the outcome of surgery, or showing somebody the outcome of some business activity, or giving them the alternatives or the probabilities more exactly between if you go A or if you go B or if you go C, these particular things are going to happen should you choose which way to go. The mind never intrudes upon free will or free choice. It will always suggest something, or it will say, if you do this, then this in all probability will happen. And that shows, again, the higher level or state of mind that everyone is able to touch upon in a state of meditation. Meditation is more than just being above attention, as the term implies. It's an ability to penetrate into the unknown and to touch upon different aspects in the cosmos, if I can say that, of consciousness, intelligence, or awareness, and then to retrieve it back. And the key that the deep state of meditation allows, the DTM, is it allows a person to set aside their bias, their personality, their ego, and truly see very clearly the answer to the question that's put forward to them. But it requires a question.
You bring up a very good point there, because I think often knowing how to ask a question is very significant. And in my observation and experience and interacting with people through the years that have demonstrated various talents, I've found that often if you did not understand that questions served a purpose, they really did, they could be a very good catalyst, that there was no such thing as a stupid question. And when you're working with people, when you're in this altered state, are you consciously aware of what you are saying, or is your wife doing the recording of all of this, and are you totally unaware?
Well, it's like being in a dream. after the session, I wake up. I know I have done something, or I've had a dream, but I can't recall a thing. In the state of this detachment, my personality, my consciousness, is asleep. Hence the in-joke about the book, The Secrets of Life, being written by a man who was asleep. In a state of meditation, it's a cognizant ability to be consciously aware of your subconscious abilities. In other words, when one is in a lighter state of consciousness or meditation, you're aware of your surroundings, and you're able to maintain a state of relaxation. But while you're being aware of your surroundings, you are not becoming aware of the greater consciousness beyond your surroundings. So while I'm in this state, I am in a deep state of sleep. The respiration goes down. People don't touch me or it will shock me. People who have walked past me when I've done this on a stage or in a large group, it feels as if I'm being burnt. People who have taken pictures of me while I'm in this state, I have woken up remembering red glaring lights in my mind. So there is a sense of awareness, it's there while I'm in this state. But when I'm in this state, I remember very early when I first started practicing this that I was thinking, I'm listening to myself and thinking, I'm talking. This is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking these words while this other part of me is describing somebody's health condition. So for a certain part of this, there's a threshold between conscious and unconscious, and the idea is that you trust enough to let go completely, to go into a state of sublime relaxation and detachment, so that the soul mind can come through and come up with this information that retrieves answers to questions or gives people direction. But at that point in time, for all intents and purposes, it's like having one foot in heaven and one foot on the earth. It's a between world that is not remembered, and not the points of reference are blurred, that there is no reference. But in waking up to describe it, it's like having no memory of what I've just done or said. But that doesn't mean that people who, like I did in the beginning, can't get into a profound state of meditation and remember or observe what they have just done.
Doug, your book, Secrets of Life, is written in a way like a textbook, not dry, as so many textbooks are, but you wanted to have this book give a positioning of information for people. And I think so often when individuals have an interest in developing their intuitive self, which I know you feel as I do, it is a natural companion in life. This isn't something to be feared. It belongs to all people. But if you want to develop your intuitive talents, you must be willing to put time into it. How many years did you practice?
Well, I agree with everything you've just said. If you're approaching the greater consciousness, you have to put time and effort into what you're attempting to learn. Again, there's a certain natural fear factor where if all the Sunday school lessons come back, that you might be dealing with something that's not of the light. But at the same time, if you're enthusiastic or if you're motivated or if you have something that really is genuine in front of you, again, faith, belief, evidence, that seems to take a back seat, and your enthusiasm carries you forward. But you have to have successes along the way. You have to say, how did I know that somebody had a blue carpet in their house? How did I know that they had three fish in the fish tank? How did I know that somebody was something, something? And how did I see that little purple-green light on top of their head? And how did I get this funny feeling or this gut feeling that that was going to work? If you pay attention to all those things, you're already on the path, and it is a natural progression. You just have to pay attention. Now, it took me a few years to really get into a deeper state of meditation because I was finding my way.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have a real teacher to say, okay, we're going up to the temple, you're going to do yoga every day, and you're going to do this and this and this. After all, I live in the West. I have a Western environment that I must live in. I had to go to work at the newspaper every day, and but it became all-consuming. I wanted to find out everything I possibly could, so I had this drive, and it didn't. I didn't stop when things didn't work out. I didn't stop when somebody's opinion was conflicting to what I had already been told.
Mm-hmm.
I continued on with, okay, I don't understand that. I'll just put it up on the shelf, and I'll continue on until that might fit in. Eckankar was one of those things. If it doesn't fit in, then I'll just forget about it, and I'll keep on going. And the idea of keep on going and not listening to people who will dissuade you or misinform you is very important as you find your way spiritually. But every day, 4 hours a day, or four times a day, 10 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 4 o'clock, and sometime after supper, either at 7 or 8 o'clock, I would do a one-hour session reading for a person. The key here is that you can start off with your friends, and it's kind of playful.
Mm-hmm.
And you may be right, you may be wrong, but there'll come up those things when you say, now, how did I know that you were just at the racetrack this afternoon? That's amazing. That'll never go away. I had a friend yesterday morning, an older gentleman. I called him up, and he was a very spiritual person. He was a Mason, and he said, "How did you know to call me? I was just thinking of you, and you called me. How did that happen?"
Mm-hmm.
It's called telepathy.
Yes.
However, that never goes away, and the sooner you can learn to say, that was pretty amazing, I did it, without feeling like I did it. It's more like, you know, the part of me within, that part that makes up me, that part that I am, that did it. And this is just more evidence that I have this ability called telepathy, or I have this ability where I can see things at a distance, remote viewing, or I can see things, you know, when I project my mind in time, or when I can see clairvoyantly while I'm awake, or while I'm in meditation, or while I'm in a dream. But it takes a long time to perfect it. And part of the perfecting of this ability is setting the ego aside. And I'm not talking about that part that's egotistical. The ego, the self, that wants to be right, that's afraid to be wrong, that might be have some bias or prejudice within it built in from your environment or background. Setting that aside and keeping an open mind, and at the same time, being able to lay hands on somebody and their headache goes away and say, we did well, meaning the inner self, the high self, and yourself for choosing to do this. Being able to walk that line without getting yourself, your head expanding or feeling, you know, that you're something really special, that's part of the process too. And as you continue walking this path and continue seeking, as it says in the Bible, knock and the door shall be open, seek and ye shall find. It means don't quit. Keep looking, keep knocking, keep asking. And I encourage everybody who wants to do a deep meditative state of reading or inquiry to keep going. Practice, practice, practice.
I agree with that. My guest today is Douglas James Cottrell, and that's spelled C-O-T-T-R-E-L-L. You can go to his website, douglasjamescottrell.com, and you can find out about him, his work, his wonderful book, Secrets of Life. If you are interested in developing your own abilities, this is something you might want to add to your library, because this is one of the things that he wanted to put out for people so that they could have an understanding of where he went and why he accomplished what he has accomplished, and his understandings of what this talent is all about. And Douglas, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
It has been a delight having you as a guest. I wish you continued good fortune and a wonderful new year.
Thank you very much, and the very same to yourself. May you have a wonderful 2007, which adds up to 9, which is fame and fortune, and I hope it's prosperity and plenty comes upon you.
Oh, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Ready, willing, and able for it all.
Okay.
Have a wonderful life. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. Don't you go away now. We are going to be right back.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and telephone lines are now open if you'd like to call in and chat with me. The telephone number, toll-free to call in the U.S., is 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. From Canada, toll-free, it's 888-810-8322. That's 888-810-8322. And for everyone else, it's 530-876-3222. And all I need from you is your first name or initial, and then I'll be glad to share my intuitive insights with you, and you're welcome to ask a question. Having someone like Douglas on the air, I've had individuals ask me, gee, Donna, you're a psychic. Why in the world are you having another psychic on your show? Well, I'll tell you what. Nobody has the absolute on intuitive abilities, psychic abilities. And as long as there have been people on this planet, there's always been this talent and this capacity. And one of the ways that I think I can best serve you as a listener is making you aware of those people who have integrity, who, like myself, love what they do, and really enjoy educating people about it. Why? Because when you live in a state of fear, ignorance, and superstition, and those, I feel, are our three biggest enemies, fear, ignorance, and superstition. When you live in that environment, you're never going to go beyond what someone else may dictate to you. And in my experience of psychic development and evolving into a career associated with mind, I have found there are so many variables of demonstration when it comes to skill. And so when I can bring to you other individuals who can share their wisdom, share their publications, and be able to tell you how very significant this can be as a tool, then it is going to empower you as an individual. And I reflect on this because when I've taught classes, I've encountered people of different mindsets as students. And this is normal. This is what you always encounter whenever you're going to be teaching anything. And I have been so saddened sometimes by the attitude of fear that people will have when they have a natural talent. And I think of one woman that I met, and I felt so glad that she was so happy that she was in my class, because I like to think that maybe I enabled her to release a positioning of fear that she had had, because she started out experimenting with a Ouija board. And you will hear all kinds of statements made about a Ouija board and how it can be bad and that can be this, that, or the other. And what her first experience was when she was quite young, her brother had been serving in the Second World War. She was quite young at that time. And she said, we did the Ouija board, and I got the information through the Ouija board that my brother had been injured. She was told the location where her brother had been injured, how he had been injured, and that he had been sent to a hospital in another country. Well, after she had this experience, she was just terrified by the whole thing. She said, oh, this is terrible. And when the family got a telegram within a week or so after she had had this experience with the Ouija board, stating the very thing that had come through the board, she said, this really, really made me say, I will never do anything like this again. This is bad. This is evil. Well, when I was talking to her, I said, now, look at what happened to you. Why do you think that was bad? And she really couldn't answer me. I said, don't you understand that for whatever reason, the Ouija board wasn't it that was making it work? You could take and make a Ouija board, and I know of people that have done this. They've taken a cardboard box, or they've taken a piece of wood. A Ouija board is nothing in and of itself. You go into a store, if you buy one, it's paper. You can burn the silly thing. It has no power whatsoever. The only thing that makes something work are the individuals operating it, period. And so this woman had natural abilities of clairvoyance that were manifesting itself through this tool. And when she was using this, because there was no one around to talk to her about this that didn't have preconceived ideas, she adopted all this fear. Now, when I met this lady, she was in her 60s, early 70s. And I said, I sure would like for you to release these attitudes that you have because they are encumbering you. You are in my class because you want to learn how to develop your own intuitive skills. This is what you want to do. Well, that's wonderful. But as long as you have this attitude or fear of something, it's just like when people say, oh, tarot cards are bad or something like this. And I'll say, well, wait a minute. Let's go get a deck of the tarot cards. Take a look at them. What are they? They're pictures on paper. They're nothing more. They're nothing less. It is allowing yourself, when you use a tool, you can use goat dung. For heaven's sakes, people centuries ago, they used all kinds of things, and they do today. So anything that allows you to focus and to shift out of what you call the thinking, reasoning mind, where you just separate from it and you become a clear channel, you are receptive and you're open to information. Now, people don't realize that they use these capabilities every single day. But this is part of your nervous system. It is a part of you as an individual. It's built into you for survival purposes. And when you can understand that, then you're going to be able to step forward into a feeling of comfort in developing your own intuitive capacities. And there's many, many, many levels to this. But again, you can take all the psychic ability in the world, and it's not worth 50 cents, unless it's something that's usable, for heaven's sakes. It doesn't do any good to go out and try to develop certain things, and if it doesn't have value, It's just going to be fluff. It's not anything at all. In fact, it'll get downright boring. But when you understand that you can take this intuitive process and you can utilize it in your own life to help yourself, to help others, and however it demonstrates itself through you, whether it's telepathy, whether it is clairaudience, clairsentience, I mean, there's all kinds of words that have been developed. It's all the same stuff. That's the way I look at it. It's just like when you go into the grocery store. What's in the grocery store? Well, in today's grocery store, you have everything from batteries to turnips. All right, that's fine. So when you go into the grocery store, the first association usually is food, isn't it? Well, you go into our store today, and you may say, I want bread, and you have 40 different varieties of bread. You can also go down a different aisle, and you can find all kinds of mixes to make bread. There's as many different combinations of information to be able to bring something together. And every single one of you listening to the show have these talents and have these capabilities. But like with any talent, you must be willing to invest the time, the effort, and the energy into developing it. And if you're not especially good at one level, try another. There are so many different ways that it can demonstrate. And that's what I love about this work. That's what I love about doing what I do. Because I find there's no end to your capabilities. And not only that, maybe I should say there's no ceiling to it. Not only that, but you can meet so many interesting people that have had their own particular varied experiences. So if you want to develop yourself, if you want to search and explore, realize that this is something that takes time. Some people are able to have their talents developed at a relatively young age, but you don't want to push too hard at it. You want to be able to work with it, enjoy it, and let it flow through you. And typically, as the older the people get, the talent can become more and more refined. Why? Because it relates to your nervous system. So I just wanted to share those thoughts with you, because when I was listening to Douglas and I was listening to his story, and I thought, there's always a catalyst somewhere that motivates us to explore. But again, I think the three biggest enemies we have are fear, ignorance, and superstition. And it comes in every culture and every shade and color of the rainbow. And it's only we as the individual that can make a difference with that. And so, shifting from that into something else that complements this, that's where attitude can make a difference. And I wanted to talk about attitude a little bit today. And by the way, if you wanted to give me a call, you could let me share my intuitive insights with you. 877-876-5227 is the number. Or from Canada, 888-810-8322. Here we are, right at the beginning of a new year. Some of you maybe have taken the time to write down resolutions or goals, whatever term you're comfortable with. And often we forget that when we are setting agendas for ourselves, we have to keep an eye on our attitude. And the mind, often a term that is used is called the monkey mind. We have a tendency to yak, 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 yak. And I don't know about you, but if I don't pay attention to the way my brain is operating or the conversation that's going on in my mind, sometimes it can get extremely aggravating. It can be so aggravating and so annoying that I can actually talk myself out of doing something I know I need to do. So that's when you have to take dominion. And your attitude of expectation, your attitude of results, your attitude of enthusiasm, positive thinking, your attitude makes a difference. So if you find that maybe because you're very fatigued, you haven't been getting the rest you should get, maybe you just need to lay down and take a nap and shift that attitude. Give yourself a chance to shift. Sometimes we're in environments that are heavily pressured and we don't feel like we can breathe and we're just overwhelmed. Take a walk. Do something that's going to enable you to make that shift that you need to make and put your attitude where you know it should be. And you're the one that determines that. Nobody outside of you determines it. You're the one that determines it, because you're the one that is the dominating factor of yourself. You're the one that has dominion over your personal environment. You can't necessarily affect the world around you, per se, by making them do what you want, but you sure can affect your own environment, and then that, in turn, ripples out and affects everybody around you. Donna Sebo here. We're going to be taking a break in just a minute. Now, tomorrow we're going to have an interview with Alessandra Rain. We're going to be talking about deeds of trust. This is a true story of a woman's life that is absolutely amazing. So we're going to be chatting with her tomorrow. Don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. Telephone number to call to is 877-876-5227 for those of you in the U.S., from Canada, call us at 888-810-8322. That's 888-810-8322. And also our other open phone line is 530-876-3222. Now, for those of you who are listening from Alaska, I am going to be traveling up to the far north in the latter part of January. I'll be up in Fairbanks and also in Anchorage. And I'll be letting those of you know that are in other states when I will be approaching other areas as well. The traveling lady has started her journeys for this year. I don't know about you, but during the winter months, one of my greatest joys is observing nature. And here in the Pacific Northwest, we have, in our particular area that we live in, we have deer that will come through, we have the big bucks, sometimes yearlings, and we have all kinds of wonderful birds. Well, when it's winter time, food is in, not such abundant supply. So you can make some tasty feeders, and this can be for anywhere in the country. I really like these suggestions, so I thought I would share them with you. Of course, bird seed, you can toss it on the ground at any time, and the little fellows will come down. But because you have so many different types of birds, depending on the part of the country you live in, different feeders will accomplish different things. And here are some of them that even the kids can get involved in doing this. And it makes the kids feel very, very special when they can. Or if you have a neighborhood group that gets together and you say, gee, what can we do for our friendly furry friends that keep us company and delight us with their happy songs even during winter? Well, pine cones. If you live in an area, as I do, where you've got all kinds of pine cones, well, they make fabulous natural feeders. And all you have to do is mix equal parts of peanut butter, cornmeal, and birdseed in a bowl, and then take the pine cones and roll them in this mix. Or you can, if you're one of those that's rather fastidious, you can spread it on to the pine cone petals with a knife or your fingers, and then just put them aside. They'll sort of dry when you set them aside after you've finished putting all of this stuff in them. And then you can take a piece of yarn or twine and then hang them on different branches, and the birds will gravitate to them. They just absolutely love them. It gives them some energy for the cold, cold weather. Also, you can make sunflower bags. You can take old net onion or potato bags, cut them up into squares, and place sunflower seeds on the top of the square and gather up all of the corners and tie the bundle with, again, some twine, some yarn, whatever you want to do. And then you can take and attach them to thin coat hang wire and hang them from the tree. And what happens is that the birds will latch on to the netting itself with their feet. They'll grip onto it, and then they'll feed through the holes of the netting with this mixture that you've got. And you can also make some cookies. And what you can do is take cookie cutters. Yes. If you would put them away after all of your seasonal cooking, all you need to do is bring them back out. And again, kids have a blast with this. Just take your bread, and you can cut the bread with the cookie cutters, make a hole near the top with a straw, and slip a piece of twine, again, or yarn through the hole, and let them just stay out overnight until they become hard as a rock. And then you can put equal parts of cornmeal, shortening, and peanut butter on the bread. Mix it, obviously, all together first before you spread it. And then roll it in birdseed. The birds love this. And last but not least, you can take a needle and thread, and you can string popcorn, dried fruit, like dried cranberries, and even Cheerios to make Lays for the birds. Yes, and then loop them around a tree. Also, gutted out orange halves filled with birdseed can also be hung from trees. And yes, I know, the squirrels like to get into them. We've got the most intelligent squirrels, I think, in the world, because I'm sure there's those of you across the country that would say, no, Donna, we've got them in our part of the world, too, and they're pretty savvy and pretty smart. And they like to get to sunflower seeds and like to get into all kinds of stuff. So just make a whole bunch of them. But if you put this on the branches, then the birds will have plenty of food during the winter. It's not going to cost a fortune. And, again, if the kids are involved in it, they just really like it. And they like watching to see how the birds respond. And then you'll always have plenty of activity in your backyard. I know we were given a big bag of pecans, and they were from a particular orchard. And so we decided that we would share them with some of the critters around us, because shelling pecans can really be the pits. Boy, they were gone. So the creatures during the winter, they are always looking for something to eat. And those are just some good tips to share with you. Donna Sebo here. Give me a call if you would like to let me light up your life with a little bit of insight. 877-876-5227 or 888-810-8322. That's from Canada, or 530-876-3222. Now, I don't know about you. I'm not specifically savvy about iPods, but I came across this information by Mark Saltzman, and I thought I would share it with you today. With the iPod, that has become so popular with so many people, especially Apple's iPod players. They're wonderful for those of you that love to listen to music when you're on the go. So they've got all kinds of different things that they have been able to add to these very portable units for your listening pleasure. One is an FM transmitter charger kit that enables you to listen to your iPod songs, podcasts, or audiobooks in your car without risking your safety or your driving skills by wearing headsets. And a dock for the iPod attaches to your car's cigarette lighter, because that provides power and recharges your iPod. And then a clever FM transmitter in the dock wirelessly beams the audio to your car's FM radio. Also, they have wonderful speaker systems. You can plug your iPod into a variety of systems, like your bedside clock radio, a boombox for music on the go, or a high-end home system, complete with a subwoofer and 200 watts of power. And they also can double as iPod chargers. But they now, the biggest and hottest thing is the video, and they've got all kinds of video clips, movies, TV shows, just all kinds of things. You can even put your own home video in this if you so desire. And you can just go, there's so many different ways that you can get a hold of this. And if you want to take care of your iPod, you just need to remember, by saving battery power by using the backlight and shuffle functions sparingly. That'll help. And for protection, there are cases on the market that can shield your iPod in case you happen to drop it. Ever happened to you? Mm-hmm. That's happened to me with a cell phone. This is Donna Sebo. My goodness, we are out of time. Tomorrow we have a fabulous guest, Alessandra Rain. Deeds of Trust is going to be the subject, and it is an awesome personal story that I know you will be fascinated with. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. You are a wonderful person that has the opportunity, no matter who you are, no matter where you are in this moment, to make a difference in life. Invest in yourself. You're the best asset you've got. This is Donna Sebo. Have a magnificent day. We'll be back with you same time, same place tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.